Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to 2022's first episode of Getting It Out Podcast. The song you just heard was Sword Woman by Maul. Maul is a traditional heavy metal band out of Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, which is a lot of places, but only one place also. You know, there's three names in there for one place, so that can be a little confusing, but I think you know what I mean. It's a city in Canada. In a territory in Canada? Is it a territory or province, British Columbia? I'm not sure. All that we can be sure of is that they have bad teeth and cocaine addictions there. You know, that's the mashup. It's like one of those mashups. It's like that that Bobby Ramone album going around right now with the Ramones and Bob Marley, which, by the way, I have no interest in hearing, mainly because it's reggae. And anytime I get the opportunity, I'll bring up my reggae joke that, ironically, I dread reggae. Anyway, moving on. Maul's debut full-length is self-titled and is coming out on Gates of Hell Records. this Friday, January 14th, Gates of Hell Records is a sublabel of Cruz del Sur Music, which is based out of Rome, Italy. And it just so happens that this week's guest, Nate Tyson of the band Spellbook, is also on that label, Cruz del Sur Music. So you see how we tied it in there. And they also seem to play music that you might call traditional, and you'll probably call it heavy metal. You might call it classic rock, although it's not quite classic. It's got the sound. You know what I'm saying, right? It's just rock and roll, baby. That's what we're talking about on this episode. Nate Tyson from Spellbook coming at you real quick. But first, it's time for the Getting It Out podcast intro song. Let's do the long version. Let's break it in for the year.
Yeah, what's good, all you bitches and bitchettes? It's the illustrious Hot Dog back at it again with another podcast intro. He said, oh, you want to do a podcast intro for the Getting It Out podcast? He said, oh, shit, I got to write a rap first, don't I? He said, no, you don't got to write a rap first. It's a hardcore podcast. He said, all right, I think I can maybe make that happen. Let's see what we can do. Kick it. Make family and a friend. Make friends and an enemy. Peace to my family, make friends till they bury me. All the places we've been, we're never sitting it out. We be getting it in, where you getting it out? I said all the places we've been, we're never sitting it out. We'll be getting it in, where you getting it out? Get in it out! All right, motherfuckers, you're in the right place at the right time. Rest in peace, J Money, and LFTW forever.
Okay, so it's the new year, 2022. I don't know if we can still call it the new year. We're 9 days in at this point as I record this. But, you know, we're near enough into the new year that we can still reference it, at least in conversation. I think that's fair. All right, I do think that's fair that we recognize we're in a different year. You're probably still writing the date wrong. I would, too, if I used writing implements. I don't use any writing implements, or at least I try not to. I use all texts. I use my thumbs to text. And my fingers to type, right? That's the way we do it in 2022. No more pencils in 2021. How about that? No more pencils. Get rid of them. So far this year has been all right. And I know that's like supposed to usually be a joke of some sort, but I'm being serious. It's been all right this year. Last year kind of ended not so great in some respects. In other respects, it was great. But yesterday we were able to start off the year with a little bit of healing from some of the bad things at the end of last year. We had the memorial show here locally for my dear friend Scotto. And the show was ravaged by COVID problems, which I think everything is lately. Everything's fucked up by COVID and there's not much we can do about it. Unless you just want to start ignoring it, which I am on board with. We can do that. I'm game. But anyway, so we had this show yesterday. The lineup changed tons of times because people couldn't play. They were on, and then they weren't, and then they were on, and they weren't. I want to thank the people who sent me stuff so I was able to provide a raffle to raise extra money for his family. It went great. We were able to raise quite a few thousand dollars, so that's awesome. That was very helpful. Big thanks to the bands that did play, Kirkby Kiss especially, because they also sent stuff ahead of time. Without even being on the show, and then they eventually got added to the show just out of kind of a coincidence. Fluffer is a local band here. There's also a guy who played the show acoustically, just him and his guitar doing cover songs, and I thought he was great. His name was Blake Hillard. He could have played longer. That would have been fine with me. Who else was on this? No Good Deed from Ohio, Pennsylvania. I introduced him as that way, and I don't think they liked it very much, and now I can't let it go. I'm sorry, guys. It's just a funny thing to me. I like saying Ohio, Pennsylvania. And if somebody was from like Cleveland, I'd say they're from Pennsylvania, Ohio. You know, do you get the joke here? It's all the same spot. That's what I do. Anyway, they were awesome. They had a great response. Actually, when I talked to them after they played and I thanked them for playing, they said it was like one of the best responses they ever had. So it was very cool to see that and hear that. Also on the show was Split. You might know Split from back in like episode 40-something when I had Willie Blaze on to have a conversation about that band at that time. They've been broken up since then, but they were able to put together a last-minute set to headline this one. It went off well. They sounded great for a band who hasn't played in so long, and I'm very thankful that everybody was able to do what they did for the cause. I gotta say, it was the first time I was at a hardcore show in that area for a very long time, and it was not the same as I left it. which is fine. You know, things change. I don't know that it changed for the better, but who the fuck am I to judge a thing that I'm not so involved in anymore? You know, that would be self-righteous of me, I guess. So I'm not going to do that. It's just different. And you know, it's weird when you used to look around the room and know everybody in there. Now you still know a good amount of people, but there's a different attitude. There's a different tone to everything. And I don't know. It was interesting. An interesting perspective. And it wasn't bad. I can tell you that. It wasn't a bad thing. It was just a different thing. All right. So speaking of local stuff, my guest today is Nate Tyson of York, Pennsylvania's Spellbook. I grew up in York, Pennsylvania. Nate grew up in York, Pennsylvania. And we talk a little bit about that. So if you're not down for some local talk, that's fine. But it's here. You're going to have to skip past it. Or you can just jump right now. All right, you don't need to listen to this, but I suggest you do. Especially if you're not familiar with Spellbook and you like rock and roll music, because Spellbook encompasses all the greatest things about rock and roll music and puts them in a nice, pretty little package, specifically on their last album, Magic and Mischief, out now on Cruz del Sur Music and available everywhere digitally. So, before I go too long into that, I might as well play you a song from that record. How about the first song on that record? It's called Wands to the Sky. Check it out now. All right, well, the first order of business should be, which Black Sabbath albums do you recognize?
I'd say all of them, including Dio. After that, I'm lost.
You're out, or you're just lost? Okay, because I think a lot of people are just lost. Don't like them. It's that they're not even aware of them.
I'm aware of them. I just never gave them really a shot, I guess. But I know people that love those records. I can't say that I shun them. I just never really gave them a shot.
Yeah, I hear that. The reason I asked this is I was having a conversation the other night, and somebody said, like, Dio's the worst Black Sabbath singer. And I was like, well, that's ridiculous. He's probably the best. But he's also, like, there's so many Black Sabbath singers. And the two people I was talking to were like, what are you talking about? I'm like, come on, man. I don't even know the exact number, but you have Ian Gillan, you have Tony Martin, you have, what's the other guy I'm forgetting? You have several people, right?
For Tony Martin, I don't even know who else sang for him after that.
There's the guy, I think it's the Eternal Idol album, or is that Tony Martin? I don't know, but there's a name I'm forgetting. That I'd say and you'd recognize. But anyway, lately I was going through and I was listening to those records and just thinking, you know, if these weren't Black Sabbath records, they'd be pretty good. You know, which is weird.
Totally. Yeah, and it's not so much the singers, but I mean, but they change styles hardcore with each like guy pretty much. So it's like you're more talking like which era as opposed to like which singer's the best. You know what I mean? Because obviously Dio's a better singer than Ozzy.
Right.
But the Ozzy material is my favorite.
Yes, I'd agree too. But those Dio albums, and I also, well, not quite include it as the same, but Dehumanizer is pretty awesome too. But Mob Rules and Heaven and Hell stand on their own. But yeah, nothing compares with the original stuff. But yeah, anyway, that's...
Yeah, once they got Dio, they like just dumbed everything down to like just a generic heavy metal sound. Whereas like the stuff they were doing with Ozzy, it's like evil jazz, doom rock. You know, it's like way more interesting to me than what, not to say the stuff they did with Dio was bad. It was just a completely different band at that point.
Yeah, no, I would never call it bad. I think it's fantastic. I think it's amazing that they were able to do that. But it's not the same. Like, and this is why I brought this up with you, because you're a guy who likes this type of music. Like, to me, when I listen to Deep Purple, I don't get the longevity that I get from Black Sabbath, even though they went longer. And I don't know, they probably had the same turnover rate. But you're a big Deep Purple guy. How do you feel about them?
My personal favorite is the Coverdale era, Burn and Stormbringer. I think those two albums for me are like peak. That's like, you want to talk like proto metal. They kind of invented it with those two records.
I can't argue against that. Machine Head is so good though that I have a hard time putting any Deep Purple above that one. But I'll allow it.
Machine Head is definitely like their classic. You know, has like all the hits on it. They even like their very first record,
Shades of Deep Purple.
Yeah, with the singer that went on to be in Sir Lord Baltimore, I think.
I'm not sure. I mean, of course, I know Sir Lord Baltimore, but I'm not sure if it was that same guy.
Yeah, that singer went on to like be in that band or other band. But yeah, like that first record sounds nothing like, you know, the other two eras.
No, I totally agree. But it doesn't. But it's all pretty good. Although I can't quite. Deep Purple now is a little tough. You know, like they sound like old guys. That's I don't know if you listen to new Deep Purple records, but they sound like old guys. That's okay. Well, they earned it. But yeah,
my drummer loves like all things Deep Purple, and he praises their new stuff too. I haven't heard much of it, but I know he would kill me if I was like, yeah, the new stuff sucks. But.
Well, listen, I think the name of their last album was Whoosh. And that's kind of the way you feel when you listen to it. You're just kind of like, whoosh. Like, yeah. All right. Hang it up, guys. But don't, because you deserve it. You know, you can do it.
They're having fun.
Right, right. It's like recently I finally saw Judas Priest for the first time. And and not that good. Like Halford was great. You know what I mean? Like it's amazing. He's doing what he's doing when he's what, like 7 years, but you know, they're getting through it, but I definitely missed the peak. Yeah. You know, it's pretty evident at this point.
I saw them about 10 years ago and they were fucking awesome. But now they just announced they're continuing on as a four piece with just one guitar player.
Yeah, which is interesting. Get rid of Andy Sneap. But
no idea how they're going to pull that off. But.
backing tracks. But we'll see.
You have to, right?
I'd imagine, yeah. I'm sure KK Downing's ready to step in anytime. He's got KK's Priest all warmed up, which is a lame ass move.
I heard that record. Sounds pretty.
I don't particularly like it. I just find it to be such an odd move to name your band after your old band while it still exists. You know, it's a little weird.
I guess you want to grab your old fans, I guess. The name, I don't know.
Well, let's segue this into talking about your band. It'd be like if you would name your band, when you changed your name, you changed it to Witch Hazel's Spellbook.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, Witch Hazel's Spellbook.
Yeah. Right. Which, by the way, you are in the band Spellbook, and your name is Nate, and you do vocals for Spellbook, correct?
This is true, yes.
That's what I thought. That's what I was hoping, or else this would be an odd conversation to have with a stranger.
Yeah.
So, okay. So if we'll do the full transparency to people who will be listening to this. This is our second run at an interview here because we had some technical difficulties, and which meant that I couldn't hear you on the recording. So we're doing this again. So that's why if people listening, if you're like, why do these guys sound like they're referencing a previous conversation? Because we are. All right. So try to make sense of that.
We're going to be professional about it.
Right.
We're giving another swing.
That's right. But I'm glad we are because I really like Spellbook and I really like what you're doing before it with Witch Hazel. But I wasn't totally into Witch Hazel. Because I didn't like the name. You changed the name not too long ago. Why did you change the name from Witch Hazel to Spellbook?
So with our second full-length album, Otherworldly, you really started to get traction with that. That was the first album that we were actually starting getting label interest in the band. And we came really close to signing a few times, but basically the name was what was holding us back. There is another band over in the UK called Witch Hazel. They spell witch with a Y, so it's slightly different.
Yeah.
But they're already signed. They already have a few albums out, and they're similar enough in style to us. They're like a traditional, like, new wave of British heavy metal type style. But basically, whenever a label would be interested in us, they would look the name up and there would already be a Witch Hazel that would pop up.
Yeah.
So that was a huge issue. But we decided to, you know, just stick to our guns and just try to out survive that other Witch Hazel in the UK. So we continued writing. We recorded our latest record, Magic and Mischief. And that was going to be under the name Witch Hazel. And again, we got more label interest with that, and we got to talking to Cruz del Sur Music from Italy, and they were gung-ho about the record. They wanted to put it out, and then same thing happened. They looked us up, and it's not even like that there's another signed band in the UK with like the same name. There's like a cover band in Pennsylvania, our same state, with the same name. So the label searches, you know, Witch Hazel band, and the first thing that comes up is like, oh, it says here they're a cover band. Like, what is this? I'm like, oh, no, that's another Witch Hazel. They're like, well, this is no good.
That's a problem right away, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and then they do some more digging and discover the other Witch Hazel in the UK that actually has records out and everything. So they came to us and they said, basically, we will put the record out under the name Witch Hazel if you want, but we strongly suggest you change the name just for like marketing and promotional reasons, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it was at that time we just decided to pull the trigger. It's like, all right, we're going through this bullshit again. Let's just clean slate. We're getting signed. We're going to reach a whole new audience, you know, with this album. So it might as well, like, it's now or never with the name change. So we decided to switch the name to Spellbook, which is an old Witch Hazel song off of our first record. And we figured Spellbook kind of encapsulates, you know, the image and vibe that we're still going with, you know, lyrically and, like, thematically with the band. So that's how that went down.
And why is Spellbook one word? I mean, it looks like two words, but it's one word, right? Because you capitalize the B. Is that an aesthetic reason? Why did you decide to do it this way?
I guess the thought process for me was, let's make it one word because it would probably be more easy to trademark and copyright. Mm. If there is another...
Avoid the same problem.
Yeah. So, like, kind of like looking forward this time around, like, it was our drummer Nick's idea to change it to a Spellbook. And I was like, okay, well, that's great, but how many hundreds of other bands have that name? Because you'd imagine today there's probably a million of them. But
right.
We did our research, we looked around, and we actually could not find any other band with the name Spellbook, shockingly. So we're like, okay, well, that's it. Let's do it. And so we decided to make it one word. Basically, so in case there is another band down the road that decides to call their band Spellbook, they're probably going to do two separate words, whereas we are one word, just to, like, help stand out, you know, just to further identify ourselves.
Yeah. Now, imagine that would happen. Do you feel, well, all right, just because you've been in these shoes, if there were another Spellbook to pop up, how do you think you would treat that situation now? Like, if in a couple years there's another Spellbook, like, spelled exactly the same, and you've been there before, you've been on the bad end of this, how would you handle it with another band? Do you feel that maybe you would have some sympathy because you've been through it before, and you might not go after them, or do you feel like it's time to return the favor to someone else?
Well, I guess it depends. I think we do own the trademark to the new Spellbook.
All right.
So with that in mind, we do have, you know, the authority to throw out a cease and desist if need be. And especially that now that we have, you know, a label backing us up, they would probably agree to do the same thing.
Right.
Now, if it's, you know, I don't know, if it's just a guy doing cover songs and putting them out, like, no big deal. But if it's like an actual full lineup band gigging around, especially if they're trying to do, like, the same, like, style of music as us.
And yeah. the same aesthetic. Because you guys got a whole theme to your band, right? It's more than just the sound, is what I would say.
We try to. I've always been a fond believer, and if you're going to play live, put on a show and have the people something to look at, you know, along with the music. Because I grew up, you know, worshiping bands like Kiss and the Misfits. So, you know, theatrics and visually arresting bands have always been my thing. And that's something I've always wanted to do, especially, you know, since we are going for, like, that 70s rock and roll aesthetic, we want to look the part, you know, we want to be the whole package. We don't want to just have the sound and then you see the band and they just look like normal dudes. I don't know. That's always been a bummer to me.
Yeah. You don't do stage names though, do you?
Not yet. No, we just go by, you know, our real name. I don't know. We did just recently acquire two new members. We got two new guitar players. And the one guy was, like, really pushing to have, like, a stage name.
Yeah.
it just wasn't happening. I'm like, I don't think that's a good idea, dude.
Well, it wouldn't be the worst thing you guys could do. If you had stage names, I would think it would be fine. But you already started without having them, so I guess you're committed to not. I'm not going to try to push you in any direction. But... All right, so essentially Spellbook has been a band for quite a while at this point. How many years into this are you?
We formed the band in 2007.
All right, and you put out at least three full lengths, is that right?
Three full lengths and a 28-minute concept song about vampires. So.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And what people might be confused by if they try to look you up, like you mentioned, is that the previous material is under the name Witch Hazel, but the latest album, Magic and Mischief, which came out in, what is it, September 25th of 2020, I think is the exact date. So that came out, and like you mentioned, on Cruz del Sur Music, which is a really cool metal label out of Italy. How did you end up on Cruz del Sur from York, Pennsylvania to, where are they based out of, Rome?
Yes, I believe so.
Right, so York, Pennsylvania to Rome, Italy. How does that connection get made?
So we've been friends with this band called Pale Divine, and their drummer, after playing a gig with them one night, they're like, hey, so who's putting your new album out? We just kind of laughed at them, like, we are, you know, like, nobody's interested in us. And
is that how the previous Witch Hazel records were released? Were they all self-released?
Yeah, everything, yeah. And so we were just so used to doing it ourselves, you know. He's like, well, let me talk to some people and, you know, I'll see if I can get some ears on your music, because I think it should be put out, like, legit. So his band, Pale Divine, had recently signed with Cruz del Sur, and he's the one that sent it to his guy who worked for Cruz del Sur, and then he sent it to the president of the label, and then it was kind of a done deal after that.
That's awesome. And it was, Cruz del Sur is a great fit for Spellbook, too. I mean, I know they do, I don't know, what would you say? They do a lot more... It's all metal, right?
Yeah, they're definitely based in, like, traditional heavy metal.
Right, and you guys aren't that far off from that. I mean, you're not that, but you're
no,
yeah, you're close.
No, we're definitely more of like a '70s rock and roll sound. And even the label themselves said, like, we're kind of taking a chance on you guys because you're not, you know, our typical kind of band that we usually work with, but. The album went really well, and they were very happy with the results of it. So, yeah, I think it's a great fit.
That's awesome. So I guess if they say it went well, I assume you think it went well, too. Because it's been out now for, a year and a half-ish? Getting towards half-ish, not quite there. But a year and change. What has your opinion been of the reception, Magic and Mischief?
It's been amazing. I think we sold out of vinyl in Europe, I think 6 months after the release. And then we sold out of vinyl here in America. I mean, we might have like one or two copies left, you know, but, yeah. And then we also sold out of CDs every. So, I mean, yeah, it's been amazing. And even, the label put out a statement online saying like, hey, we just want to congratulate Spellbook, for selling out of, you know, vinyl. And they're like super happy with our success and blah blah blah. And so, just by pure record sales, like, well, we sold out of our shit. So, but yeah, it went pretty well.
Yeah, that's great. Now I just need you to repress it because I never got a copy on vinyl. So if you just just go ahead and repress it for that one copy, because I know there's no delays at pressing plants right now.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the other thing too.
Well, this whole thing, I think. Well, when we talked last time, and I know this from the notes too. I saw that you recorded this with Kevin Bernstein of Developing Nation Studio, which is a studio that I'm familiar with. It's a guy I'm familiar with. I recorded with him twice. And typically he does not this, right? Not this music. Typically it's death metal, it's grind, it's hardcore. It's stuff that was all over A389 Records, stuff that's on Relapse Records now, you know, like much grimier shit. So how did you end up working with him to begin with?
Right. So our first bass player, Andrew Harris, he is currently in a band called Alms, based in Baltimore. And they recorded their last album at Developing Nations with Kevin. And when it got time for us to start looking for studios for Magic and Mischief, he highly recommended working with Kevin. So we looked into him. I think I saw some interview he did, I think, with Metal Injection on like YouTube or something. And just talking about like his process and like how he records. And he was really adamant about like, we don't do drum triggers here. We don't do, you know, auto tune stuff. It's like, we really work with natural sounds.
Yeah.
And that, I was sold right there. Like, that's exactly what we want. So we hit him up, booked the dates, and it was amazing. It was definitely the best sounding record we've ever done. And Kevin, you know, he's a workhorse like we are. So it's like, there's no fucking around when you're in the studio. It's like, let's get this done. Like, do that better. Do that take again, you know, which is like, it's exactly what you want. You don't want somebody just pushing a button and be like, all right, you guys cool with that?
Yeah, he certainly doesn't handhold either, which is nice.
Absolutely. And plus, he has just a plethora of like gear at your picking, you know, like you can just use any of the stuff that he has. So we had a field day I think we had like a whole day of where we're just testing out, dialing our guitar tones. Like, let's try this guitar and that amp through that cab and, you know, really like mixing and matching. And like, we got like the best sounding record I think we've ever had because of that.
Yeah. After listening to your discography, I would say that's absolutely correct. And it's also, I'd say, the most dynamic record that you've done so far. The Witch Hazel records I like them a lot, but they are the tempo's a little bit slower throughout, you know. You still have that on Magic and Mischief, but it's a little more, it's mixed up a little bit. The beginning seems like it comes at you faster, and the end, we'll get to that later, but the last track is a whole different thing. When you were going into writing and making Magic and Mischief, were these changes deliberate?
Not really, to be honest. We, like, our role is, if it doesn't make the record, it makes the next record, you know? And it's basically, what are like the best 7 to 9 songs that we have at that time frame, and boom, that's the record. You know what I mean? It definitely is kind of all over the place. It goes from like Iron Maiden-y, you know, traditional new wave of British heavy metal stuff to doomy stuff to, I mean, Dead Detectives is like a detective noir 11-minute, I don't know what you call it, like concept song.
Yeah, I would say, a concept song. Yeah.
Yeah. It is really all over the place.
Well, and that 11-minute concept song, Dead Detectives, from what I saw, got mixed reviews. Some places loved it, some places hated it. Where did that song come from? I mean, is that something do you think people can expect more of from Spellbook on future albums?
Well, going back, it was kind of like the same thing we did with that 28-minute concept song about vampires called Nocturnity. We kind of tapped more into that with this song. And it all just started from a bass line that our bassist Siebert came up with. And then our guitar player at the time, he just kind of ran with it on guitar. And just the second we started messing around with like the beginning riffs of it, it's like, man, this is super moody, atmospheric stuff. With this one, let's just go balls to the wall. Like, let's not worry about trying to make it a single or, you know, trimming anything down. Like any idea you got, let's just run with it. And at the end of it, it's turned into 11 minutes long, and there's like narration, there's like voice acting going on, there's like sound effects, all kinds of crazy shit. It's not the first time we've done something quite like that. I don't think it's going to be the last time, but for our upcoming record, we don't have anything quite as epic as that that's going to be on it.
You mentioned that you had like voice actors and stuff for that. How did you arrange all that? And was there always the thought that there is going to be this big piece at the end of the record, I guess? Like did you know going into the recording session? Let me rephrase. How much of this was mapped out before you recorded it? Like, how do you practice a song like that?
You practice the bare skeleton of it, yeah, basically when you're in the rehearsal room. But our guitar player at the time, Andy Craven, he's also a published author. He writes books. So he wrote kind of the story and concept of what the song was going to be about. And when he sent me the lyrics to it, it had all these like quotations of like, you know, Paperboy shouts and then, you know, like
right,
all this stuff. And it's like, oh man, we're just going full blown cinematic with this. So we're like, okay, well, we should definitely, you know, get some people to play these parts. So we went with our friends, Rachel Robinson and Matt Suter, two local friends, two amazing singers that have always kind of been like the fifth and sixth member of our band. We always get them to like do our backup vocals. Like we've gotten them for, I think back since Nocturnity. So we brought Rachel and Matt in, and they also do backup vocals throughout the record, but we also got them to do the voice acting for that stuff. And yeah, once it was done, it was the kind of thing like once you keep piling more to it, it just gets better and better and better.
Yeah.
So why stop? Just like, just throw every idea you got at it. And then at the end of the day, it is what it is.
Right. And at some point it's, well, pretty near it from the beginning, it's kind of over the top for anything modern. So you might as well just go all the way with it, you know, lean in entirely because it's already there, you know, and that's something I like, even if I don't particularly like the song. Actually, you know, here's the thing. I do like the song. I like the song parts of it. I just wish it was all one, like one condensed song. Like that's because I feel like there's some really cool song parts in it. But when it gets drawn out, I get a little lost in it. But I still think it's cool. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's so cool that you guys did it anyway. You did it like your totally own thing. And I feel like that's why it seems like such a polarizing thing that I've seen in these reviews, that people have so many comments on it, because it totally stands out. And I think for good reason.
Well, yeah, for anybody, it's either your favorite song on the record or it ruined the record.
It doesn't have to go that far, you know, because I wouldn't say it ruined anything for me.
The reviews were like, this ruined this record. Like, it was all good up until then. And then, like, other people were like, this is, dude, that's my favorite song off that album. I was like, all right. But we knew that when we were making it. Like, this is a total fucking oddball, weird song. And all we can do is just put all of we got into it, and what it is. But yeah, actually, it was never meant to be the last track on the album, actually. Originally, I had it as, like, I think in the middle of side B, and it was actually Cruz del Sur's idea, like, no, like, this has to end the album, which rubbed me the wrong way, because it's like, guys, we're the artists. Let us do what we want to do. But looking back, like, it probably is the best bet, because it's like, if you get all the way up to Dead Detectives and you still have Amulet to go, you might not get to Amulet. You might just shut it off at Dead Detectives. You know what I mean?
No, yeah, I think putting it at the end is a good move, because kind of makes sense to me. If you hate it, you just don't listen to it. Like, you can just stop there. But
exactly. Yeah, it totally makes sense looking back. So yeah, I think that was the right move.
What? Speaking of, like you said, maybe it's not your favorite. What is your favorite song?
Probably either "Wands to the Sky" or "Amulet." Those seem to be like the two, you know, fan favorites.
Is that
"Wands to the Sky" has such a, you know, fast, energetic? Like, it's great to open shows with that song. So it's always fun to play.
That's what I was going to ask. Which one do you prefer? What do you prefer playing live?
Oh yeah, definitely "Wands to the Sky." Yeah, it's a great opener. People go nuts for.
That's awesome.
And it's got that kick-ass drum intro, a la Deep Purple.
Deep Purple. Hey, and you know what? Last time we talked, I said the wrong song. I thought about this like 300 times since then. I think I said "Highway Star," which is not what I meant at all. I meant "Pictures at Home." "Pictures of Home." That's the Deep Purple song that I love. That starts with the drums.
Gotcha.
It's been bothering me. I'm glad we had to re-record this specifically for that reason. What if this was all just a scam that I just wanted to bring up the right Deep Purple song? That's all.
Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't, but it could have been.
And I still say Fireball was the direct influence on the intro to "Wands to the Sky."
That's fair. That's fine. You know what? Earlier today, I was on the elliptical listening to Deep Purple, and I specifically went with Burn. I went with that record, and I think it was you. I think one of the things we talked about last time around was what we consider to be the best rock and roll song of all time, and I think that was your answer. Was it Burn?
I picked Burn just because it's like, fuck, isn't that like a 9-minute song?
Yeah, it is.
And it is just, it blisters from start to finish. Like, there's no letting up. You got both Coverdale and Glenn Hughes singing their nuts off. You got Ian Pace shredding the drums throughout the entire thing. The crazy, like, orchestral, like, movements that Blackmore's doing with the guitar and the organ, like, little shit in the middle of it. It's just all over the place, but it's nonstop speed and, like, aggression.
Yeah, no, it's an awesome song. And you know what? The singer that I was trying to think of earlier for Black Sabbath that I couldn't remember is Glenn Hughes.
Yes.
That was, now that you say it, that's who it was.
Well, what record was
he? Oh, I don't even know if he was on a record. It was in the mid-80s. What record would that be? I don't know.
Because other homeboy from Deep Purple was on Born Again.
Ian Gillan, yeah.
Ian Gillan. Now he was just on that one record, I think.
Was it Seventh? Maybe it was Seventh Star. I don't know who was on that one. Or that was a bunch of... It might have been Seventh Star. I don't know.
Nick, I apologize if you're hearing this. He's pulling right now. How the fuck are you in my band and you don't know this shit?
It's all right. It's hard. You know, as much as I was thinking about this, we're going back to the beginning of the conversation, but I was thinking about this when I was talking to the guys who I was surprised they didn't know there was other singers than Dio and Ozzy for Black Sabbath. It's like, hey, it's okay. Like, I'm not making fun of somebody for not knowing everything about every fucking stupid rock and roll band there ever was. You know what I mean? Like, there's tons of shit that I don't know, you know, and it's, but I feel like people feel weird talking about stuff because they don't want to say they don't know. Like, hey, who cares? It's all right if you don't know stupid fucking trivia facts about music, you know?
Well, speaking of which, it's funny because when we were recording the record with Kevin and we're trying to dial in our guitar tones, you know, we're trying to describe to him what we're going for, like a 1975, you know, like UFO, kind of like sweet, you know, kind of guitar sound. And he's like, I don't know what you're fucking talking about. so we had to put on the album, like have him listen to UFO, you know?
Yeah.
So.
And that's great. And that's a guy who knows his fucking music. And, you know,
exactly.
And it benefits him so much to tell you. It benefits all of you for him to just be honest and say, I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Well, UFO, yeah, like UFO is a band that I feel doesn't get a whole lot of credit these days. But I like you said, I'd imagine you feel like there's a lot of UFO in Spellbook.
100%. Yeah, there were, UFO, they were Iron Maiden before Iron Maiden. You know, UFO and Thin Lizzy were doing those twin guitar harmonies. I mean, and Wishbone Ash, I guess. But other than that, like, no one else was really doing that back then. But yeah, UFO's Phenomenon, that record, is, from start to finish, is, like, that's what I want Spellbook, like, that album. Like, that's what I'm striding to with every song, like.
That's a great one. You know, it's funny that you mentioned Wishbone Ash, too, because I was listening to their self-titled record earlier today. I've been on this thing where it's January, so I'm trying to listen to everybody's. I'm trying to listen to all first albums, debut records.
Oh, cool! Yeah.
And today I landed on Wishbone Ash because I love Argus, but I never give the rest of it enough credit because that self-titled is great too. Lots of it's great, but I specifically love Argus.
Argus is the one, really. Like when you show somebody that band, it's like, we'll start with this.
Right, right. Well, so you and I can throw back and forth these rock references, proto metal, whatever we want to call it, rock and roll. I don't know. What do we call this type of music?
I just call it rock and roll, but I mean, we always have. Like, I've always considered Sabbath, Sith, you know, Deep Purple. I always consider that just like 70s rock and roll. But I guess the deeper you go, it's like, well, technically it's 70s metal, and a lot of people call it that. And a lot of people call it proto metal, which I guess, like, if you want to consider Black Sabbath and Deep Purple proto-metal, then that's what we are, I guess. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right. Well, the reason I ask that is because I wonder how much, and what's like the demographic of the Spellbook fan? Because I feel like there's always going to be people that love rock and roll music, right? But typically we think of it as older people. But do you see a younger crowd being into this type of music?
I think so. Especially being so close to the Maryland doom scene, especially, you know, in the early Witch Hazel days, we played a lot you know, interacted with that scene a lot, and that's pretty much all ages. The whole stoner doom stuff really runs the gamut. And then metal, of course, like, you know, if you're going like Priest and Maiden, I mean, there's kids that are 12 years old listening to that right now, you know? Yeah, so, yeah. And we're kind of like in between those two sounds. So it's pretty vast.
Can you imagine that one day somebody's going to be listening to, what's the earliest one? Let's say Rockarola, Judas Priest, which, you know, that's not one I go back to often, but somebody's going to be listening to that. In, I don't know what year it's going to be. It would have to be like 2070 something, right? And that album's going to be 100 fucking years old. And
yeah.
And for some reason, like, thinking about that is crazy to me, that that rock and roll music is going to be, and I mean, someone would probably tell me it already is, but like, you know, proto metal, heavy metal, whatever, is going to be 100 years old at some point in the future anywhere is crazy to me.
Well, in 30 years, the Beatles are going to be 100 years old.
That's okay. You know what I mean? They get... Like I can imagine that music being 100. Even though I like it, you know, it's not that... Whatever. I don't even know how this would ever make sense, what I'm saying. It's just this dumb thing I have in my head. It's like how, in my head, there are no humans in Pink Floyd. It's just... This is something I've been convinced of for a very long time. And it's gonna be
wild that people are like, well, it's weird to me now that people are like, bands like Slayer and Deicide are like dad metal. Yeah. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, well, fuck, yeah, I guess they are like 30, 40 years old now. Like, Christ.
Yeah, yeah. Just 60-year-olds. Man, it's weird. It's weird. Getting old is weird. But like the first era of metal hasn't died yet, you know what I mean? Like, and that's been like one of why I've been more adamant about trying to get out to see these bands that I haven't, because I didn't a lot of them, because I assumed they'd always be around, and now they're dead.
Yeah.
Like I never went to see Motorhead. That was a horrible mistake.
I was just gonna say, I got to see Motorhead one time, and I'm lucky I did.
I was supposed to go see him several times, and I bailed because of, I don't know. I was supposed to go see Black Sabbath, and I said, nah, I'll catch him next time. Now they're probably not going to play anymore. You know, the opportunities are, I never got to see Dio, things like that, like, wasted. They're gone.
Yeah, you reach a certain age where it's like, well, fuck, it's now or never now. You know, it's like, start thinking of, like, the bands that, oh, I always meant to see them live. It's like, make the time, because you're probably never going to do it.
Yeah.
You'll never get the chance.
Well, I think that, honestly, that's why the pandemic, that was one thing that really made me, so when I saw tickets go on sale for Judas Priest, you know, coming out of the pandemic, well, not coming out because we're still in it, but it was like, shit, he just turned 70. I still haven't seen Priest. I need to go now, you know, or who knows. And then the guy had a heart attack later on that tour. So, you know, days are numbered. Yeah. It could happen anytime. But so anyway, so you guys are playing quite a bit, it seems, lately. Now, this is coming from a guy who barely leaves his house. So you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I've seen you have a lot of shows, at least locally. You play in New York, you play in Harrisburg. I saw you up in New York for a couple of them. How much time would you say you guys put into Spellbook now? Is it like a weekly thing? Do you play every weekend? What's your commitment?
Right now we rehearse twice a week. Once the record came out, it came out during shutdown. So there was nothing going on. There was no tour or anything to support it. But it still did well anyway. But, after we recorded the record, our guitar player, Andy, left the band. So it was kind of a blessing in disguise, because, like, could you imagine, like, we have this album, we're signed. There was talks of a tour of Germany before the pandemic hit, and we don't have a guitar player. Like, holy shit. But pandemic hit, so that gave us a lot of time to reform the band, and we got two guitar players now, Les and Pat. So we basically spent all of shutdown kind of just, like, writing new music with them over, you know, video chats, you know, because we weren't having, like, live rehearsals yet. So yeah, once things started getting a bit safer, we felt more comfortable, then we started having legit band practices with them. And we basically wrote a whole album right out of the gates with them. But then once things started opening up, we had to kind of switch focus and like, all right, now we have to relearn the old stuff, come up with a set list of like otherworldly tunes and Magic and Mischief stuff. So we spent the whole summer doing shows with those guys. And it was really weird because it's like dates would pop up and then they drop. Then a new one would come up and then they drop. And then we would play some. It was just like really like you couldn't keep a hold on it, you know? So it was hard to like kind of, you know, I made like a poster for like all of our dates, you know? But then it's like, well, two of those dropped because of pandemic stuff. And then we got added to like three more. So I just kind of stopped updating it. And it's like, if the shows happen, they happen, I guess.
Yeah.
But, so yeah, we spent the summer, doing shows with them. We, like you said, we played up in New York, played, down in Delaware, you know, and a bunch of local stuff. But now, we're gearing up to record our next record. So we do have, pretty restricted time frame on that. So we've been really rehearsing the shit out of these songs just to get them ready for the studio. So we've been rehearsing twice a week now.
And what's the plan for the next record, if you can talk about it?
So we have 9 songs right now. We're going to narrow that down to 8. We are going back to Kevin at Developing Nation Studios in the beginning of February. We have 9 days to record a full-length album. And we have till March to hand in a completely finished album for Cruz del Sur, or else the album's not coming out in 2022, thanks to the vinyl shortage.
Wow.
So
that's a pretty quick turnaround.
Yeah. Like, we got to get really tight really fast, and hopefully we can get everything done in those 9 days in the studio. We already have the album artwork done. Everything's kind of ready to go, except we just need to make the album now. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully we can get it done.
Well, it sounds like you got a plan, at least. And I'll be impressed if anybody can get an album recorded and released in 2022. That seems like it's impossible. So if you guys can pull it off, I'll be very impressed.
It sounds like, and nothing has been signed yet. So nothing's like set in stone, but the goal is to submit an album to Cruz del Sur in March and hopefully have the album released late 2022.
Right. So do you know, I mean, just out of curiosity, do you know, like, so working with a European label like that, do they press it all in Europe or do they have that done over here?
They press it in Europe and then they send us copies to sell on the road.
Gotcha. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
So I assume Europe...
They don't have any offices in the U.S. quite yet.
Right. So, but I assume Europe is under the same vinyl shortage as we are.
Yeah, it's worldwide, dude.
So weird. Such a weird thing.
Yeah, what a time.
I know everything is, you know, there's delays on everything right now from the type of work I do. And you'd have to be blind to not be aware of it. But, like, never at any point did I think it'd be hard to get record. New ones. Yeah, it's just... it seemed like a dead world.
Well, you figure... God, I mean, I don't know how many pressing plants there were pre-pandemic, but it probably wasn't a whole lot. You know, it's probably, I don't know, maybe 100. I mean, I could be just talking out of my ass, but...
Yeah.
Once one of those major pressing plants go down, like, there's, like, a... half of the vinyl industry, you know what I mean? It's nuts.
Yeah. Hey, you know what's really interesting, and we're both from relatively the same area, so maybe you're aware of this, maybe you're not. If you are, maybe you know something I don't know. But if you take George Street in York straight up north to like the Mount Wolf area, there is a there is an old record plant there. It's like America Vinyl something or Record something, right? It's like right across the street from like a giant gas station or a giant grocery store. And you can see shelves full of records through the one window, but it's been shut down for years. And it's just like this place, like, what the hell's in there? I want to go in there and go through the collection I want to see what's in this building. Like, this building needs to be fired back up. And you could have your records pressed right at home.
I was not aware of that, to be honest. I'll have to talk to the guys about that.
It's like a closed down record pressing plant, but it's like right in York, north of York City. Yeah.
Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah, get in there, and you can have that out in. You can have it pressed in March and out in April.
Yeah.
DIY.
Speaking of which, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of a secret recording studio in the heart of downtown York City?
A secret one? No.
Okay. Apparently, the dude from Live has like a multi-million dollar recording studio.
Yeah, I know exactly where it's at.
It's
pretty obvious which building it is. There's a big roof deck on it. I know exactly where it is. There's a gated parking lot where there's expensive cars in it. I mean, Everclear did an album there.
Is it near the Revolution Stadium, baseball stadium?
Just past it. Yeah, just north. It's just south of it, I would say.
Oh shit. Okay, I wasn't sure if it was real.
Southeast, just a couple blocks by the train tracks. This is a very local conversation, but that's okay. Yeah,
I heard fucking Lady Gaga flew in and did some tracks there, and it's like an unmarked building, just like in York.
Yeah, it's like a white. From what I remember, it's like a white brick building. Think Loud Studios is what it's called.
So it's not super secret.
No,
I'm just dumb.
Oh no! I just googled it. It says permanently closed. So.
Oh no shit.
Yeah, I mean, but it was a thing for a couple of years.
And it was the dude from Live that built it or some shit.
Yep. Chad Taylor is his name.
Gotcha.
Oh, okay. So I just googled it, and not only was this thing not secret at all, it was a big white building, white brick building, with the words in black on the side, "Think Loud."
Well, fuck. Well, I never heard of it. My buddy's like, dude, it's like a secret unmarked building, and like Lady Gaga records there, and it's right in York. Holy shit.
It's marked as shit. But it was for a couple of years that there was a lot of cool music being, or cool or not cool, depending on what you think, but a lot of music being done right there in York, Pennsylvania by Chad Taylor. Well, he had a lot of metal coming out of there too, because he had Carson Slovak and Grant McFarland in there doing records as well. So they do a lot of they do more like metalcore stuff, but that's where they were based out of. And it was like Candlebox and Everclear, and yeah, they were all doing their records in York.
Wow. And this was like what, 10 years ago?
No, this is like 5 years ago, man. Not even.
Oh,
like when I moved out of there, it was still there, and I moved out of there 3 years ago.
So I could have just been hanging around, and I might have saw Lady Gaga.
Yeah, but you know, you can do that in Lancaster too, right?
Well, yeah. I don't know if she still has property there or not. She was like I think she was married to a guy from Lancaster, but they're not together anymore.
Well, no, I just mean that here in Lancaster, they have Rock Lititz, which is where all the bands come to rehearse. So that's why you'll see a lot of tours start in Reading, Pennsylvania, or somewhere around here, because they come to Rock Lititz to rehearse their tour. That's why Judas Priest's first show in 2 years was in Reading, because they were here getting ready, and that's like the launch-off point.
Yes, I do know about that place. A buddy of mine either worked there or did work there for something. And he's like, yeah, like they build the stages and shit, and like Metallica's gear is in there. And
Yeah. Yeah, you'll hear Ariana Grande is at the Starbucks by the Target, and it's a big deal. You know, Green Day's at the bowling alley. And it's funny being, you know, the small town. And why this is here, I have no idea, but that's where it is.
Right?
You know? Yeah.
Okay, I just want to plug a big show we have coming up at the end of this month, January 29th, at Love Drafts Brewery in Mechanicsburg, PA. It's the Nightmare After Christmas show. It's the 7th annual. It's 5 bands for $3. We got Prince Diamond, Sabbath Warlock, Us, Spellbook, Verminoth, and Wrath of Typhon. We do it every year. It's a big party. So if you got no plans, January 29th, come on down. It's a great time.
And January 29th at JB Love Drafts, is that the you said the brewery, not the bar, right?
Correct. Not the micro pub in Harrisburg. It's the actual brewery in Mechanicsburg, PA.
Okay. And Prince Diamond, what is Prince Diamond? That's like a King Diamond tribute set, right?
So Prince Diamond is York County's premier tribute and the only King Diamond approved tribute to King Diamond. It is awesome. It's our buddy Matt Suter. He sounds just like him. They do the whole stage show. They do all the hits. They only play once a year, and it's at the Nightmare After Christmas show.
We'll be right back.
So there you have it. That was my conversation with Nate Tyson of Spellbook. And the song you just heard was Amulet, Fare Thee Well, which of course is off of Magic and Mischief. They're not quite debut full length, out now on Cruz del Sur Music. Be on the lookout for the next record, the as of yet untitled. Maybe. I don't know. We didn't go over that. But, you know, why would they tell me that at this point anyway? Be on the lookout for whatever Spellbook's up to next. I'm sure it will be awesome. And that's going to be it for the first episode of the new year. I want to thank Nate once again for doing that with me, literally twice. I appreciate it. And I want to send you all out on a song that I'm not sure if it's good or not yet. I've listened to it a few times, and I still don't know where I stand on it, but I like it enough to play it for you. This is Space Coke with their cover of Danzig's Twist of Cain. It's off of their Lunacy record. They just dropped it today, January 14th, so go check that out. Go check out that Mall record from the beginning of the episode that came out today as well. Just go check out some new music. There's something worthwhile out there for you. And if you don't like it, then just go back to Black Sabbath and Deep Purple. That's okay too. All right. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.